You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Brr! I was outside doing some work this morning, freezing my butt off. The fall is here, folks. Bundle up, please. Don't catch a chill this early in the cold and flu season. Also, remember to go get your flu shots. If you're over a certain age, check out the pneumococcal pneumonia vaccination. And of course, please talk to your doctors about getting your updated COVID vax. And just a note on all of this, a really good question to ask your general practitioner about vaccines is, hey, when should I get them? When is their peak effectiveness? Because if you get them early, they might not quite carry you through the peak of the cold, flu, and COVID season. And another question is, especially if you're immunocompromised, should I get all of them at the same time? A lot of physicians will recommend that you do get these vaccinations or your updated flu shot all at the same time. Generally, that is to ensure that people get these life-saving vaccinations and flu shots in the fall and winter cold, flu, and COVID seasons. But especially if you're immunocompromised and you know that you'll get in there, sometimes it's a little easier on the system to space them out. So folks, just a little PSA to start us off this Wednesday hump day afternoon. With that business taken care of, let us jump into the headlines. Well, according to Donald Trump, if they're white, they're right for the United States. The Trump administration, this according to the Washington Post today, the Trump administration's plan to overhaul the U.S. refugee resettlement process, which basically is to try to shut it down for all intents and purposes, bizarrely coincides with an effort to prepare thousands of specifically white South Africans to relocate to the United States through this refugee resettlement system. I just want to point this out. If you are the perpetrators of a race-based apartheid government, or if you benefited from said race-based apartheid oppressive government, I don't think you get to qualify as a refugee. Maybe that's just me, but I don't know, like, oppressive racial group does not on Earth One here equal refugees. Just my opinion. If the administration succeeds in going forward with its white makes right refugee policy, almost all people that will be admitted to the United States as refugees, as many as 7,000 from, get this, a total potential pool of 7,500. Yeah, this is the effective sort of elimination of the refugee resettlement process. Basically, almost all of those people are going to be these white Afrikaners. Wow. Let's just call it what it is, folks. This isn't a dog whistle at all. It's white makes right per Donald Trump. In other hopefully more encouraging breaking news this afternoon, remember I told you about that racist Paul Ingrassia that Donald Trump had proposed to appoint to lead the Office of Special Counsel? Well, he's withdrawn his nomination after the string of racist text messages came out, as reported by Politico earlier this week. This is the text stream where he called himself, or he said he had a, quote, Nazi streak. Yeah, again, see point one today in today's breaking news. White makes right. You know, the young Republicans, the white makes right over there, the appointee to the Office of Special Counsel, white, apparently ethno-Christian nationalist makes right for that guy with his Nazi streak. This all came about because at least five Senate Republicans said that they opposed Ingrassia's nomination, which is enough to block his confirmation. About time. Boy, you think they might regret confirming RFK Jr.? Maybe the nut job that's running the Department of Defense? Who knows? And I just want to make this note. Setting aside the white makes right Donald Trump policy for everything, including his now former nominee to lead the Office of Special Counsel, setting aside this guy's virulent racism and affinity for Nazis and apparently, therefore, by extension, genocide, here's Ingrassia's background. This guy was admitted to the New York bar last year. So he is a baby lawyer. The Office of Special Counsel is an office filled with lawyers. Their jobs are incredibly important. They deal with whistleblower complaints, you know, actual federal employees trying to point out fraud, waste, and abuse. Typically, this office will be led by very nonpartisan career civil servants with extensive, potentially decades worth of experience in both whistleblower complaints, as well as employee and employer law. The dude that was admitted to the New York bar last year ain't what I would call a legal expert on such matters. So entirely aside from his obvious overt racism and Nazi sympathies, the guy was just unqualified. But we've got to get the, you know, the leaked Nazi sympathizer text messages to boot the guy's nomination. Totally ridiculous. And just on a related note, again, the Office of Special Counsel is, for all intents and purposes, a form of a specialized independent oversight office. Again, handles employee, federal employee, whistleblower complaints, handles employment matters writ large for the federal government. It's an incredibly important office. Again, an oversight role that Donald Trump was picking someone who is patently and objectively completely unqualified to run. And oh yeah, he also turns out to be a racist, jackhole, Nazi guy. But in that same vein, Donald Trump has now fired yet another inspector general. Parisa Saleh was the internal watchdog who had earned an incredibly strong reputation in her nearly 15 years of government service for finding fraud, waste, and abuse. This is what inspectors general do. She had risen through the ranks across a number of inspector general's offices at the State Department and USAID. You know, these agencies that have been targeted by the billionaire overlord Elon Musk, their budget slashed, USAID basically doesn't exist anymore. You would think that you would want the 15 plus year experienced fraud ferreter outer lawyer that's so good at the, nope, he fired her butt. It's truly shocking. Last week she got notice that the Trumper fired her effective immediately. The reason? There was some line very vague about the administration's, quote, changing priorities. So let me get this straight. Your priorities actually aren't fraud, waste, and abuse. That's just a fig leaf cover for decimating federal government so that it doesn't work anymore for any average American, so that you can start to shutter agencies willy-nilly, especially those pesky oversight agencies like the Office of Special Counsel and like all the other inspectors general that Donald Trump has fired. I want to just, you know, most of you that have been listening to my show for a long time know that I've worked in various levels of government. I've worked in the federal government. I've worked at city government. I've worked in county government. I've done advisory work for state government. I have dealt with internal auditors, the equivalent of the federal inspectors general, throughout my career. I have at times given them legal advice. I have at times, when I was in private practice, actually helped government officials that were responding to various inspector general requests or investigations. I have seen investigations proceed over many years relating to fraud, waste, and abuse. And here's what I've got to say about it. It's not fun for people if they have someone that whistleblows or tells the inspector general's office, hey, there's some fraud or there's been an abuse of power in my department. And this very extensive investigation proceeds. It can be very burdensome. You have to respond to oftentimes voluminous questions. You have to provide documents. The inspectors will come into various departments for quite some time. They will interview employees. But it is a process, I will tell you, that is essential to ensure that government is doing the people's work. That any given jurisdiction, whether your township, a city, a village, a county, a state, and yes, even the federal government, that those federal agencies are working to serve everyone and that they are doing so as efficiently and as effectively as possible. And perhaps most important, that the people that are running those agencies aren't turning them into vehicles for their own self-enrichment, the enrichment of their families, or engaging in obvious self-dealing, conflicts of interest, directing contracts to their favored people. That is part of what these offices do. The public needs to have faith that those things are not happening. So with all of that in context, let's just look at some of the other headlines. Donald Trump and the most obvious instance of self-dealing ever is going to decide if he gets $230 million. He's decided to take a contract away from Elon Musk and give it to his new best friend, billionaire bro, Jeff Bezos. This is the kind of stuff that you need inspectors general to investigate. The Donald Trump and the Trump family's use of these cryptocurrency frauds, these cryptocurrency grifts, that's a violation of various federal laws. All of this is conflicts of interest, self-dealing, and corruption at the highest level. And so I ask you, why do you think Donald Trump has fired Inspector General after Inspector General after Inspector General? Why do you think Donald Trump wants to install in the Office of Special Counsel, which is responsible for protecting federal employee whistleblowers? Why do you think he wants a completely unqualified, and now we know, racist Nazi in that position? Because Donald Trump doesn't want to be held accountable. He thinks the rules don't apply because he thinks he's a king. I say no more. We'll discuss more of the headlines, including the $230 million self-dealing debacle that Donald Trump proposes to sign off on for himself when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Your lady lawyer's here on the radio with you. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. This is The Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Wednesday, and Donald Trump is in rare form with what is, I can honestly say, to the best of my knowledge, and I did some poking around, a situation that has never occurred before in the entirety of American history. And I know we use the word unprecedented all the time to talk about what Donald Trump is doing. Gutting IG's offices, appointing lackeys throughout government that are facially unqualified to do the jobs, gutting ethics offices, basically saying no one can conduct any oversight of Donald Trump because I am amazing. I'm the only one that can save America. This is the guy's approach, right? But there is no bigger grift, an instance of self-dealing, than the fact that Donald Trump himself is going to pay himself $230 million for what I'm going to call completely illegitimate, legally spurious irrational administrative complaints that he filed related to the investigations he faced during the Biden administration for all of the crimes that Donald Trump committed in his first administration. There are specifically two administrative complaints at the root of this, one related to the probes into his 2016 campaign's alleged ties to Russia. By the way, like, not alleged, Don Jr. in Trump Tower met with a Russian operative. They talked about Clinton. Donald Trump basically invited Russian interference from stages during his 2016 campaign. And let's be clear, Donald Trump then later appeared to extort Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky for dirt on Biden. That was impeachment 1.0. That's one of the complaints. The other one is about the 2022 Mar-a-Lago search and accusations leveled against Jack Smith. If you would have turned over the documents that the National Archives, the FBI, and the DOJ had been begging Donald Trump to turn over a year following his exit from the White House after his first administration, there would have been no raid. And by the way, Jack Smith, again, just for the factual record, wasn't appointed special prosecutor on that case until after the flipping raid took place. It boggles the mind. This is self-dealing. You don't get to approve your own legal settlement. You don't. It's really insane. And any lawyer would get this question right on their ethics exam, unless you work in the Trump administration. And listen to Donald Trump talking about this. It's mind-blowing. Take a listen to this.
The New York Times is reporting that your legal team is seeking $230 million from your own Justice Department now in response to the investigations into you.
It could be.
Is that something you want your legal team to
do? I don't know what the number is. I don't even talk to them about it. All I know is that
I'm sure you don't.
They would owe me a lot of money, but I'm not looking for money. I'd give it to charity or something. I would give it to charity, any money. But look, what they did, they rigged the election. And as you know,
let's shut this buffoon off. I can't even listen to the rigging the election nonsense again. You mean just like he gave to charity before, but then it was tracked down that he didn't and he ended up pocketing the money? Here's what David French had to say about it. Quote, "It's hard to think of an action more purely corrupt than a president ordering the executive branch to pay him hundreds of millions of dollars. I cannot wait to read the MAGA defenses of this, and there will be many. They'll display Soviet levels of sycophancy." David French, I completely agree with you. This should be such a problem. And I just wanted to point this out. Trump is obviously basically has torn down the East Wing of the White House. And he's building a $250 million vanity project ballroom. So let's just put these numbers together. That $250 million that he wants to pay himself for bogus complaints, plus the $250 million for the White House vanity project. So like $500 million, all of it is ethically rotten to the core. Here are some of the funders of Donald Trump's, I can just call it a profane desecration of the White House. Oh, the Adelson Family Foundation, the Altria Group, by the way, that's Philip Morris, so big tobacco, Amazon. And guess what he did today? Yanked a contract away from Elon Musk and gave it to Jeff Bezos. Elon's real mad, which is hilarious to watch happen, because Elon's big retort on X about getting this contract ripped away from SpaceX and given to Jeff Bezos is, "Why are you gay?" I'm not kidding you. This is what the guy put out on X today. I'll go on. Google, i.e. its parent company Alphabet, Comcast, Coinbase, Meta, Microsoft, Planeteer Tech. Now, these are all major donors to Donald Trump. These are all companies run by CEOs who were in the front row right next to Trump's family at the inauguration. And the list of compromising donors or compromised donors continues. It is pay to play. It is self-dealing. It is conflicts of interest. That is the watchword and guide in Trump administration 2.0. Anybody else think this is stupid and ridiculous and dangerous? I sure do. Stay tuned. We're going to come back. It's Wednesday. It's going to be 4:30 shortly. That means it's time for Broad Appeal. I'll be joined by candidate for Senate District 13, Sasha Ripley. We dig into her incredible background, and we talk about her challenges accessing affordable health care and what she plans to do about it as a state senator. I'm Maggie Dawn, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Remember, if you want to see the show behind the show or hear the show behind the show, you can always watch us, including what's going on during our commercial breaks, by looking up the Civic Media channel on YouTube. We also stream live on the Book of Faces, the Gram, and that thing we used to call Twitter. Please do check us out there. Just search for Maggie Dawn Show. I am so pumped. I love these segments. We do this every Wednesday at 4:30. I talk to women that are organizers, activists, elected officials, candidates that care about their communities and want to do something about that. And I'm really excited to bring to this segment today that we like to call Broad Appeal here on the Maggie Dawn Show, because women have broad appeal, is the candidate for the Senate District, the 13th District. Her name is Sasha Ripley. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Sasha. Thanks so much for being here with us.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me. It is great to meet you.
I was really taken with how much you share on your campaign website, which, let's get the campaign site out there right away. It's Ripley4FORWisconsin.com, Ripley4FORWisconsin.com. You shared a lot about your family's background, but in particular, when you talk about what you want to see for high quality and affordable healthcare, you shared some of your own personal challenges when you had some pretty big health challenges in your life. And shared about the challenges you had to get that quality and affordable care. And I wanted to start there because we're in this moment where Republicans are refusing to even talk to Democrats in Congress about restoring the ACA subsidies that have helped make the ACA and health insurance at least somewhat affordable, more affordable for millions and millions of Americans. So we're on this precipice, this cliff, where folks are going to be losing health insurance. You've got personal experience about that. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what went on in your life and why it brought you to this moment and running for Senate District 13?
Absolutely. I am so happy that you asked me about this particular issue, because just like you explained, I have very personal experience with what happened to me several times. So many years ago, I just out of nowhere, I thought I was healthy. You know, I was in my late 30s, everything was fine, and suddenly I started having migraines, and about 3 weeks later, I found out that I had a tumor in my pituitary gland. It was very scary, and it required brain surgery. So obviously, that is not cheap. Brain surgery is definitely extremely expensive, even if you have health insurance, which I had. So I had health insurance, and after the surgery, I had to spend 2 or 3 weeks. I can't remember. It was terrible. I had a lot of complications. I think it was a little over 2 weeks I spent in the hospital, and I was unable to work for, I think it was like about 4 or 5 months. And it left me in debt. I think it was around $150,000-$160,000 after my insurance. And then a few years ago, I also developed viral meningitis, and I was unable to work for about 6 months. And of course, you know, you try to get ahead, you get some savings, and then something like that happens, an accident, an illness, something like that, and bam, you are in financial distress.
It is an endemic and universal problem here in the United States. When you look at personal bankruptcy filings in the United States, it's slightly over two-thirds of those are because of medical debt, which is just shocking. You write on your website just what you explained. Most of us are just one illness or accident or a lost job away from being homeless. And you say that you're committed to expanding Medicaid to reduce the cost of healthcare and prescription drugs. I mean, this is crisis level proportions. And we're looking at a MAGA party that apparently doesn't care. And that to me is just shocking. So I just wanted to start here and tell you, Sasha, I really appreciate you talking about this and sharing your personal experiences. And I also wanted to tell you, I too had meningitis when I was a child. Viral, but it takes a long time for them to figure out what is what. Mm-hmm. I was blessed because my parents had very good health insurance. But I have been between jobs and been stretching with Cobra, and I literally was sort of holding my breath, hoping that nothing bad happened, because so many of us, even with insurance, end up crushed by medical debt. This is not the way it is supposed to be. Putting a pin in this for a moment, I wanted you to share with everybody a little bit about your personal background, your family, where you grew up, because I also noticed on your website, and again, it's Ripley for Wisconsin, F-O-R, and her name, I guess, is Sasha Ripley. She's a candidate for Senate District 13. You talk about the importance of housing in rural Wisconsin, and I just wanted to give you the opportunity to share with people a bit of your background and why you're focusing on this extraordinary need that we have for more affordable housing in rural Wisconsin, not just in big cities like Madison and Milwaukee.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing that information about you also struggling with viral meningitis, because yes, it is serious and it is a challenge to get over. And we never know when things like that are going to happen to us. That's just it. No matter how hard we work, it's just a surprise. Yes, thank you for asking me about my background. So I lived in Marquette County most of my life. So Marquette County is a unique place. It's a great place. We have wonderful people and they're hard workers. Community is very important to us. People care about each other here. And so I've wanted to spend most of my life in the county. We have one stoplight in the entire county. So wow. It is, you're right. It is very rural. So very conservative as well. But again, it's such a close-knit community, small towns. The largest town is around 1,400 people. That's Montello. So that's in the county. Now, my district in general is fairly rural. I have all of Green Lake County, all of Marquette County, and most of Dodge and several small portions of counties, but it's fairly rural. And I graduated from UW Stevens Point. I was a single mom, so it took me about 8 years working part-time. I worked at a local family-owned pharmacy, Bentley Pharmacies. There were three pharmacies that they owned, and I worked in all of those while I was putting myself through college. And I got my degree in teaching. And I'm a certified teacher in psychology, political science, history, biology, social studies. So I worked really hard to try and be successful, but it's a struggle, especially in these small towns. There's not a lot of opportunity. And when you asked about the affordable housing, I have spent so much time here. I talked to a friend of mine who is a landlord, and she had a place up for rent. And she told me, and this was in Westfield, Wisconsin, about 1,300 people. She told me she had 80 people show up to the open house for one place. And I did, this was about a year ago. And so I thought, I'm going to look into it, see what's available in the area to rent. There was one other place to rent in the entire county. The whole county of about 15,000 people, one place to rent. And it's just, it's not sustainable. And we have price gouging, right? People, I was hearing that people were having their rent doubled, sometimes almost tripled overnight. And you can't tell me that landlords were fine paying their bills when the rent was $800 for the last 5 years. And then suddenly overnight, they need to be making $1,600 a month.
Yeah, those, when you see rent jumps like that, it is truly shocking. And I made note, Sasha, on your website, again, this is Ripley for Wisconsin. When you're talking about affordable housing in rural areas, you pointed out, and I don't know that everybody is aware that this is going on, that there are companies that effectively sell software or memberships that use mathematical algorithms to effectively help landlords price fix at levels that are far above what is the prevailing market rent. In other words, they're driving up the so-called market rents by colluding, by sharing this particular software program. This is specifically the RealPage company has been pointed out. They've done this in many, many states. The Biden Justice Department sued RealPage for this basically price-fixing scheme back in 2024. That lawsuit has basically gone kaput under Donald Trump. It's really challenging. If you're elected to Senate District 13, what's your plan to help with affordable housing in rural areas? And the problem that you've described, we're seeing everywhere, affordable single family homes. People can't, used to be like, oh, I'm 30-ish, I'm going to buy my first home. They're so expensive. Many people I know have just given up on that dream. And you're talking about just being able to find a rental unit, for crying out loud. What's your plan if you're elected to Senate District 13?
So thank you so much for asking. First of all, I just want to bring up that they have started working on Democrats especially, but there is some bipartisan plans that people are looking at right now, which is great. It seems like it was a long time coming. It seems like it was being ignored. That is part of why I decided to run for office, is I felt like the most important things, I mean, housing is the largest, it's the most expensive thing most of us are going to be paying for. It hits us the hardest. So the accessory dwelling units, the ADUs, right now, that would be a great way. This wasn't my plan, but that would be a great way to you know, get people in a home quickly and affordably.
Yeah, the key, as you point out on your website again, is to increase supply, not in 3 years, but right now, so that people can access housing. Housing, if you have stable housing, you will keep that job, your kids will be in school, your life will be stable, and people are able to do for themselves. It is the key to human dignity. We're going to continue on the other side my conversation with Sasha Ripley, candidate for State Senate District 13. She's also been teaching folks in GED and high school equivalency classes. We're going to talk about her thoughts about education on the other side. Stay with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Every Wednesday at 4:30, we have a segment called Broad Appeal. I talk to women candidates, elected officials, activists, and organizers about their efforts to make their communities stronger, more resilient, and overall more healthy. We've got a candidate with us this Wednesday right now. Her name's Sasha Ripley. She is running for the state Senate seat in District 13, covering Marquette County, Green Lake, Dodge. I'm forgetting another county that you cover as well, am I not?
Yes, so we all of Marquette, all of Green Lake, most of Dodge, a small portion of Jefferson, a small part of Fond du Lac, Winnebago, and also Adams.
Wow. You're going to be busy driving around, yes, visiting all of your hopefully constituents. Yes. Before we went to break, you and I were talking about housing. You mentioned that you wanted to make a couple of other points before we talked about your experience in education. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Yes, it is so important, both for the price of houses, you know, to purchase a house, but also rental properties, to increase supply. Wisconsin, along with many parts of the country, but Wisconsin is so behind on housing. We need a huge amount of houses built. We need so many houses built. We need to increase supply. I would like to see something similar to, say, USDA direct loans, construction loans, which don't work for USDA construction. It would need to be changed. But my idea is that I would like to see very, very low interest loans to construct houses for new construction, modest, affordable, single family homes, with low interest rates, sponsored by the state, to get houses built. Because right now they're doing some things like, you know, changes in zoning and some things like that. And that's fine and it's helpful, but is it really going to build 200,000 houses if you make some changes in zoning? Sometimes I feel like, you know, they say, yes, we're doing all these policies, you know, for affordable housing. But is it just to say that they're doing something, or is it really something that's going to make a difference? So that is something that I would really like to see. I know that, I mean, vouchers, down payment assistance, those things are helpful. But if you really think about it, unless we start building homes, it just increases the price.
Yeah.
Of the few homes there are.
We need, like, it's sort of an all of the above approach. It's going to require looking carefully at zoning, especially for multifamily unit dwellings. There are never enough of those. It's going to take jurisdictions looking at landlord discrimination. There's a lot of discrimination that's going on.
Yes.
It's going to take looking at, of course, the supply end problem and the pipeline and trying to expedite that. And especially a focus on, hey, why aren't we seeing new construction for entry-level home purchases, right? Mm-hmm. That you mentioned, you hit this really hard, and this is so important. You see a lot of construction of the McMansion 500-plus, 400-plus thousand. That is not a freaking entry-level home for people. We've got to make housing affordable. We need a much greater concentration of new housing starts in that range of 300 and less. And frankly, the private equity companies snapping up all of this stuff all over the place ain't helping this one little bit. I am so impressed, Sasha, by your insights that are specific on this these big range of issues. And I'm especially impressed, and I think it's so inspirational, that you have spent parts of your professional life helping people get their GEDs or high school equivalency. Mm-hmm. And I wanted you to share some of the experiences that you've had trying to help people navigate the educational system.
Thank you so much. Yes, I find teaching GED so rewarding, so fulfilling. I spent some time under a federal grant for a high school alternative school. This was many, many years ago, but I taught students who had been expelled, or maybe they were sick and couldn't go to school, or they were suspended, or they quit, or they were pregnant and didn't, you know, just weren't able to go to school full time. And then I have been teaching GED and HSAD classes to low-income adults for Sauk County. A lot of them have been incarcerated or they are incarcerated, and also in, sometimes in drug treatment programs. And it's just so important for people's future to at least be able to have a high school diploma.
I applaud that. I applaud you for doing that. There's sort of a construct that I refer to frequently. If you come from a family of great means and you do well and you go to college and you get your degree, and that's, good on you. But basically, I'm going to give you a C. You had every advantage. Your parents paid the bill for your college education. You get a C. For people that face these kinds of obstacles to getting their GED, getting their high school equivalency, whether that was a period of incarceration, access, homelessness, which we've been talking about, when folks like that are able to persevere and attain education like their GED or high school equivalents, or Sasha, like you did, working as a single mom to get your college diploma over 8 years, folks like you and the people that you've helped achieve that hallmark in their lives, folks like you get an A plus in my book because you had so many more obstacles in front of you. We're going to have to leave it there. Big congrats to Sasha Ripley for her candidacy for the State Senate District 13 seat. Find out more about her and her platform at ripley4wisconsin.com. When we come back, I'm talking to Amanda Martinez and William Park Sutherland, both of Kids Forward. We talk about the emergency food assistance crisis that is looming here in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.